Hello, everybody, and welcome into this very special listener call-in episode of Truth and Justice. For all of you who listened to the follow-up episode this week, you know that Mike and I were on the road all week. We got back into town late. We were out chasing down a tip and didn't have time to put together a full episode, so we thought we'd give you, the listeners, an opportunity to call in and ask me your questions or share your thoughts directly. And so for today's episode, we're going to open up the phone lines and see what you have to say.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that he did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just Say You're Sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've seen the film. You know the game. Now, Jumanji just got real. Only at Chessington World of Adventures. Featuring Daredevil Dad, Mom on a mission, and the kids who can't wait to ride the world's first Jumanji roller coaster. An epic adventure awaits. World of Jumanji. Only at Chessington World of Adventures. Book this summer's must-do day out at Chessington.com.
Hi, Bob. This is Rachel Timberman. I'm actually one of your transcribers.
Hey, Rachel. Thank you so much for all the hard work you're doing for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
So what do you got for us today, Rachel?
So the biggest thing that kind of always comes to my mind, and I think you've mentioned it a few times, but it's when Colleen Barnett mentions that there's no reason for a burglar to target their house. The biggest thing for me is it was literally like days before Christmas. And if you wanted to do a home invasion and get away with a lot of new electronics that haven't been set up, like that's the perfect time to do it. Mm-hmm. They just kind of like draw the short straw picking their house because they don't celebrate Christmas. So they had to like try to get away with something, try to walk away with something so it wasn't a bust. But that was just kind of something I've always thought.
Yeah, I think that any kind of home invasion around Christmas time makes perfect sense because of exactly what you just said. That's when people have, you know, piles of new toys and electronics and things all under their Christmas trees. And as far as the Melgars are concerned, I think drawing the short straw on both ends is an accurate depiction because, number one, like you said, the home invaders, if that was the case of what they were looking for, they sort of bust it out because the Melgars don't celebrate Christmas. And for the Melgars, you know, there's a lot of question about what could have triggered the home invaders to choose their house. And we have to remember that it very well could have been just as simple as the garage door being open. You know, we have no idea whether it was open or closed that night. You know, if Jim accidentally opened it and didn't realize it, or maybe he took some trash out to the trash can and didn't realize that he'd left the door open. But even in the neighboring county, actually the county where Celestina Rossi works in Montgomery County, on their social media, they have this thing they put out, this hashtag 9 p.m. routine about the things that you need to do. And they've done several posts of telling people to make sure they close their garage doors because it's an invite for home invaders to come into your house and burglarize a house. So the law enforcement in that area very close to there is very aware that leaving your garage door open very well could trigger or invite potential burglars to come into your home.
Right, exactly. And then the other thing, too, that I was thinking about that is if they were targeted for that reason, I know, I think Jim Clemente, when you had done his interview, and first off, I will say I'm a huge fan of Jim Clemente, so every time you bring him on the show, I'm always so excited. But he had mentioned like how many turns there were from the CVS to the home, and there's like almost none. It's like a straight shot from where the CVS is, right, where they live, to where they turn into the cul-de-sac.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's kind of like, to be my own devil's advocate, it's like, well, if they were looking for that nice neighborhood, they have no idea if they're following them from the CVS. They have no idea that this this couple live in a nice neighborhood, especially when you look at them, because they didn't like live well beyond their means. They just were a very humble looking couple at all times. So then it's kind of like, well, were they actually followed, or was it a situation where they were specifically targeted? And I know that's kind of like a question that we'll never know until we catch them.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I've always leaned towards that the car following them was a red herring, based mostly on the fact that so much time passed. You know, if they followed them there and then waited for 2 hours before they decided to break in, I mean, it's possible. It could be, you know, that they followed them into the house. But again, to me, that has to come back to something inviting them in. So even if they followed them back, if they went in and shut and locked all of their doors, it doesn't matter that they followed them. You know what I mean? Because everybody's home at that time. So, you know, what would cause them to target Jim and Sandy unless, you know, they followed them back to that neighborhood and were, you know, driving around the neighborhood and saw that the garage door was open. So I think that it's probably a red herring, and they'd have to be pretty criminally sophisticated, because like you said, it's pretty much a straight shot to get into the subdivision. But once you get in, you've got to turn right again, and then turn left to get to the Melgar's home. And at the first point where Jim and Sandy turned right, they turned left. And so very quickly they would have been out of sight, where the people that were following them, if they were following them, wouldn't be able to see them anymore.
Yeah, and it would be a situation too where even if it was something where they turned right and then tried to turn around real quick to like avoid suspicion, then you're looking at somebody, it's like, are like they're thinking too hard almost about it. So it's like you don't want to force a theory like that.
Right. But hopefully at some point we'll figure out who did this, and maybe we'll get those answers.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Rachel. And thank you from the bottom of my heart for all the work you do on the transcriptions. I know you guys don't get thanked enough by me, because, you know, Jen Reese really takes control over that. And I honestly don't know what's happening most of the time with all you transcribers. But you guys do a fantastic job, and it's very much appreciated.
Oh, yeah. We all absolutely love it. We've got a great email chain going on where we all try to talk at least once a week. So it's a great opportunity, and I'm just super excited to do it.
Well, that's fantastic. And again, thanks so much for calling in. I'm going to let you go and let other people get through, but thank you again for all of your hard work.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Bye. Who's this?
Kathy in Texas.
Oh, hey, Kathy. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Really good. So what do you got for us today, Kathy?
I don't really have a question, but I just wanted to say that I really think that this crowdsource investigation is really important, because there's only two ways to get people exonerated. One is DNA evidence, and if you don't have that, then it's the real perpetrator being caught. And the police aren't looking for them because they think they already have the right one in prison. So, you know, I just want to thank you for doing what you did, because this is the only way that we're going to get people out like Jesse. And, I mean, there may be DNA for Sandy, but, you know, this is the only way we're going to get these people the justice, and justice for the victims.
Right. And, you know, and DNA is part of that. And I'm glad you said that, Kathy, because that's, you know, the major purpose and the benefit of the Truth and Justice Army, so to speak, for the attorneys that work on these cases, is that we are out there for free conducting an investigation that no one else is going to conduct. I mean, most
right.
defendants don't have the funding to pay for a private investigator to do this kind of work. And like you said, the police and prosecution certainly aren't interested in looking for evidence that's going to overturn their convictions.
Yep, that's for sure.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Kathy. We got a bunch of people trying to call, so I'm going to let you go, but
okay.
I appreciate the call.
All right. Have a good day.
You
Bye.
Too. Bye. We're having technical difficulties. Who am I talking to?
Lily from Florida.
Hey, Lily. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Okay, so my question is, and I've asked this in the group probably 4 or 5 times and not gotten an answer, so I'm super excited that now you have to answer me.
Right.
The first time we heard Sandy's interview, and they asked her if she'd ever been robbed before, and she said, well, no, not at this house. And they asked, what do you mean, not at this house? And she said, well, at our old house, you know, we had some trouble with friends of my daughter's. That made, like, all the alarm bells in my head go off, because that matched up with, you know, young, probably drug-addicted offenders, which is our profile. And things that Liz has said here and there led me to believe that her ex is or was an addict of some kind. And I wanted to know, because we have Liz as a resource, is there any possible connection between those people and their theft of drugs or money at the old house and this crime? And is there any possible connection between those people? Are they in the right age group? Do they seem like they might have been friends with the Kingswood invaders?
So I've talked about this a little bit with Liz, and as far as she knows, there's no connection there. But however, we are going to get into the investigation, her ex-husband and kind of that group, because of the things that happened in their previous residence. They are definitely someone mm-hmm. that need to be looked at as alternate suspects, and that is coming. I haven't gotten to that. I mentioned on today's follow-up that we haven't started looking too deeply into that yet, but we will find out everything there is to know about her ex and the friends surrounding them during that time and involved in that original or those the petty thefts that happened in their house years before this occurred.
Because all it would take is one of those friends to say to another friend who they don't know, oh, hey, I know these people, they've got a ton of prescription medication and they've got money and, it's just the two of them in their house. Like, it wouldn't take much, but for somebody to tell it to somebody else to tell it to somebody else, and the next thing you know, some people are driving around like, who, where could we go steal some pills from? Oh, I know, let's go try this place. And there it goes. It wouldn't, because it just doesn't seem like they would randomly pick that house. It seems like somebody had to know, even if it was a friend of one of the people who was there, mentioned it. Oh, these people who live here, they would be a good target.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right about that. And so when we get into them, we're going to try to find out, hopefully, if there is any kind of connection. Because, as you mentioned, it may not necessarily mean that they were involved in the burglary, but any connection
right.
could have led to some information that could have led to the Melgars being targeted. So thanks so much for that thought, and thanks for calling in.
Sure.
And we will Absolutely. Be covering that here in the coming weeks.
Okay, cool. Keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you, Lily.
Bye.
This is Sandra. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Sandra. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm so excited because I actually got to call in.
Well, we're glad to hear from you. Where are you from, Sandra?
I'm living in Virginia right now.
Great. So what do you have for us today, Sandra?
I really didn't have much to say. I just really wanted to say hi. I actually posted that comment yesterday on Instagram, and you guys seemed to like it, and so I really meant it. I really wanted to say hi. I also wanted to say thank you so much for all that you do. It's really important that you guys, what you guys are doing, and I really look forward to listening to your podcast. Your podcast was the very first one I found, and I've been stuck ever since. I met you and Mike at CrimeCon last year. And
oh,
that
great.
Was an awesome experience I had. So I'm looking forward to whatever comes next and whatever and whoever talks crap about you guys. You got to kind of roll that over, which I'm sure you already know that. But I just want to say I have your full support and I support everything you guys do and keep up the great work.
Oh, well, thank you so much for that, Sandra. And I'm glad we got to meet you. Are you coming to CrimeCon this year?
I'm not sure as of yet because I have a lot of other things going on, but it was truly a great experience last year, so I don't know. It could be possible.
Awesome. And for any of you listeners out there that are interested in going to CrimeCon, remember we have that promo code TRUTH19 that can get you some sort of discount that I can't remember on those tickets. And Sandra, thanks so much for calling. We're going to let you go because we got other people trying to buzz through on the line, but thanks
sure.
for calling, and hopefully we'll get to see you again in New Orleans at CrimeCon.
Yes, great. Thank you.
Yep,
bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Hi, this is Erica.
Hi, Erica. Thanks so much for calling. What do you got on your mind today?
So I was thinking about the Melgar case, and I was thinking back to something that we kind of went through a while ago. So my details might be a little fuzzy, but I remember a while back, I think it was a fellow listener who discovered that the blouse that was found in the tub was a Costco brand blouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there were discussions about kind of trying to figure out whether or not the Melgars ever had a Costco membership, so like to see if they could have purchased the shirt or all, but I kind of don't remember if we ever had any updates on that.
Yeah, so Liz didn't think they did. I actually spoke with Sandy about it, and she said no, she's never had a Costco membership. They've never shopped at Costco mm-hmm. at all. I also asked mm-hmm. her, did anybody give you a shirt like that? And she said, nope, she mm-hmm. never received anything like that as a gift. Now, she did say that she had a white shirt that was similar to that. You know, she didn't see the shirt itself. She just saw pictures of it. And it kind of has this lace around the neck and everything. And she says she had a shirt similar to that that was white that she used as a bathing suit cover up. But she said it was that the one that she had was a bigger shirt. You know, if you think about what we'd use for a cover up, this is a pretty form fitting shirt. It probably wouldn't be used for that. But she said at a glance, it looks like something she had as a bathing suit cover up. But she said she hadn't, you know, it was December. She hadn't been to the beach in a long time, months. And she said there's no way she would have had that out. Her bathing suit cover up, she wouldn't have had that out or been wearing it anywhere around that time.
Okay. Can I ask the second question?
Sure. Go ahead.
Awesome. So actually going to the Adnan case and kind of going with some of the information that was released in the docuseries, me and some of the other listeners kind of discussed this a little bit on the Facebook page, but I was curious what your thoughts were. So as far as the Don time card issue, I was kind of thinking, okay, it seems pretty plausible to me that it looks like there was some tampering going on there, but why do you think that it would be beneficial for them to have made it look like Don was at a different store instead of his own store?
I don't necessarily think that would have been beneficial. I think the benefit would have been that Don's mother had control of the payroll system at the Hunt Valley store. Mm-hmm. So it was his stepmom that ran the store where he was normally at. And there's a lot of, and it's all theory, but for example, if Don's stepmom were to enter in these hours for him to alibi him or whatever at her store, well, that would have put him into overtime. From what I understand, in Luxottica, they're not allowed to approve overtime without getting approval from the managers, from their bosses. So that would have started immediately raising all these red flags, whereas if another employee ID number was used at another store that his mother had access to, those numbers could be punched in over there to make it look like he was working. And most people, I think, would assume that, well, if you're working at a different store, sure, you'll have a different time card. I wouldn't have thought that, you know, you'd use the same timesheet for both stores. So I think if that's what happened, that the advantage would be the fact that, number one, it wouldn't have put him into overtime hours on his actual timesheet. And also the fact that his mother had access to that system.
Yeah. Could the overtime issue, do you think, also be a possible reason for why they would have used a different employee ID?
Yeah, it could have been. And honestly, even for, I don't want to say legitimate reasons, because it's not legitimate, but it's illegal. It's fraud. But, you know, let's say, if as an example, Don didn't have anything to do with Hayes' disappearance. But he and his mom were working to kind of scam the system to get him more hours without raising red flags, you know, then that might be a reason to use another employee ID number to keep away from that overtime issue. But it just seems like that would have been picked up by the accountants relatively quickly.
Sure.
That this same guy has two different, you know, the same social security number has two
employee
different
IDs.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, well, thank you so much. I'll let you get to some other callers, but thanks so much for what you and Mike do. I appreciate it.
Well, and thank you for all of your listening and support, and thanks for calling in.
All right, thanks. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, Bob. This is Patsy.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Now this could be any Patsy, but I know two Patsy. We've got Pam. Oh, wait, no, that's Pamela. Is this the Patsy that we had on the Sandy's friend, Patsy?
Yes.
Oh, well, hey, it's good to hear from you, Patsy.
Good to hear from you, too. I just had a question. Was, besides the people that had broken into the other house, are you going to be checking into other folks like the renters? And I know that there was also that Jim had another brother, and no one's ever talked to him. You know, I'd like to know what goes on with him, too.
Yeah, so as we move through the investigation, as I mentioned this week, until we get, I've got a little more information on the Kingwood Home Invaders that I want to share with everyone once I sort out all the details. And then after that, unless we get some credible information or incriminating information against the Kingwood Home Invaders, at that point, we're going to move on to other alternate suspects. And so, yeah, the people that I have on my list are the guy that lived down the street, the guy I've been calling Randy, Liz's ex and the group that he hung with back at the time, the renters. And yeah, I haven't done much looking into Jim's other brother, but that certainly warrants a look because of some information that I've received from Liz that at least shows that maybe there wasn't a great relationship there. Personally, I don't think that this scene profiles at all as, you know, someone with a known personal relationship, but you know, that's how we just go through every step and every lead and figure out if we can rule people in or rule them out.
Right. Because I don't know if maybe the people that broke into that other house might have known one of those suspects and were looking for that house beforehand. You know, I'm just wondering if that might have been the case.
Yeah, and that's the big thing for us is trying to find if there's a connection between any of these people. You know, and it could be, and I'm not saying this is the case at all, I haven't investigated this at all, but say, you know, Jim's brother somehow had some connection to someone who knew the people from the Kingwood home invasion and had, you know, mentioned they ran their own business, they had a safe, they kept cash, whatever the case may be, you know, that could be the connection leading to that. But we're just in the very early stages of the, you know, a new investigation, and we've just got to start checking names off the boxes, and then hopefully we'll start getting some tips coming in with the reward fund that might give us some more concrete evidence.
Right. And I hate, you know, bringing him up, you know, but it's just that at the funeral, he acted very, very suspicious. Very, you know, he spoke for such a long time about their very bad relationship and how sorry he was. And so that's the only reason why I bring that up.
Yep. So and I appreciate that. And we'll definitely look into him. You know, that's a tough spot. You know, he's family. I can say from my perspective at this point, I don't think that he is a credible suspect at all. And again, like I said, I'd hate to put that on anyone without any information. So, but we're going to look into it, see if there's any connection and figure out if he should be a person of interest or if he should be ruled out.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you so much for all that you do. I am so appreciative. It just helps me cope with, you know, what we deal with every day. So thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Well, you're very welcome. And we appreciate your support, Patsy.
All right. Have a good one.
You too. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Hi, Bob. This is Chris.
Which Chris? Is Truth and Justice admin Chris?
No. Sorry. No, this is just Chris from Indiana.
Just a regular old Chris, huh?
Just a listener, yep.
Sorry. You know, your voice sounds eerily similar to Chris Brinkley, who is one of the admins on the fan page.
Oh, yeah.
So what's up, Chris?
Well, hey, just wanted to call in, and I had a quick comment about last week's episode and then a question for you.
Okay. What do you got?
So, in regards to last week's episode and the end reveal in regards to the Brady violation, I think you've probably discovered in the time doing your podcast that getting truth is a little easier than getting justice with the way our system works. So,
yeah,
I kind of think
true.
You've done your part on that, you know, and you're committed to getting justice for the Melgars. So, you know, you were talking about how that was kind of a burden on you. I would say you've done your part as far as that goes,
well,
just getting that truth out there.
Well, you know, I appreciate that because it's still something that I've been struggling with. And actually, just yesterday, I spoke with Allison Clayton, you know, Ed and Jesse's attorney from the Innocence Project of Texas. We were talking about some other issues, and I really wanted to pick her brain about this. And, you know, and Allison really kind of set my mind at ease, too. You know, she said, you know, in her opinion, I've done what I can do. You know, if more help comes up, you know, or they need more help or there's something we can do with it. Then maybe, but you know, at least we've broadcast it. We've put the word out to Oscar so he knows about it. And then, you know, that's kind of, we've done our part without occupying too much of our time and energy, being put towards that issue. But I appreciate you saying that because that was a tough one. And also, I guess this is a good time to kind of share with the rest of the listeners too. I also, when I was asking Allison about it, one of the things I wanted to know was, you know, this is clearly a Brady violation, but does it matter when someone pleads guilty to something and in the process of pleading guilty, they've waived their appeals? And she said that it does matter. Still, there's case law out there that, you know, if they were led to a plea based on false information as he was, or information that wasn't turned over, then they can still file an appeal. But at the same time, Oscar Garcia is due to be released here in just a couple years. And as we know, like you said, it's kind of tough to get justice. So by the time this would play out, he would probably be out anyway, but he could possibly clear his name.
Sure, sure. And then just a question that I've had kind of throughout the whole season. You know, it seems kind of far-fetched because Jim seems like a good, likable guy by all accounts, but even the most likable of guys can have enemies. Have you done much looking into if there was anybody, a business associate or anyone who had any kind of vendetta against Jim? It just seems there's a little bit of a personal touch to the crime, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, I have, and it's strange. And that was one of the reasons, you know, that I was so interested in the case is, you know, the lack of motive on Sanders' part. But then also, man, I can't find anything. He seems like he was such a kind and patient man, even with the renters that we've discussed. And actually, you haven't heard it, but the call just before you, we talked a little bit about the renters that he was evicting. Even with them, he was kind and patient with them. You know, they hadn't been paying for months. He was giving them second chances, third chances, fourth chances. And that's kind of the way that he operated. So I haven't been able to come up with, you know, through the circle, you know, of Jim and Sandy's friends and coworkers, anybody that could point us in any direction, and even Sandy herself, who knew Jim intimately and would know more better than anyone, hasn't been able to point to anyone who had any kind of real beef with Jim at all, which makes it very difficult to see how someone could, you know, be his enemy, so to speak. But then there's, you know, your other point there was that the crime looks very personal. And that, you know, when I first saw the case and started studying it, I thought the same thing. You know, and the big thing is we have just a brutal attack with multiple stab wounds, which on its face looks like overkill. You know, like what we see in a crime of passion where somebody's just, you know, continuing to stab somebody after they're dead. But, you know, when we really look closely at all those wounds, what we see is, this wasn't overkill at all. It was underkill, actually. It was someone trying to connect with that fatal blow in the midst of a fight, and they weren't able to do so. And it left us with the impression of someone, you know, because we can say, you know, he was struck over 50 times. He had over 31 sharp force injuries, 13 stab wounds. You know, that this somebody just really wanted him dead. But then when you look at those wounds and see that they weren't really connecting with any of them, they were trying, but he was blocking and fighting them off, then that maybe takes it, for me at least, in my opinion, out of that realm of a personal crime of passion. And it's somebody that was attacking and trying to kill him who probably didn't plan to do so from the beginning.
I could see that, the idea that there was not a fatal wound that they kept attacking even afterwards. If I could add something real quick, I don't want to give Mike a whole lot to edit out, but I just wanted to tell you that you've actually been a real inspiration to me with your podcast. And me and my wife are actually set to launch our own podcast next week, investigating a 40-year-old cold case here in Indiana. And
oh, that's
in large
incredible.
Part due to what you're doing as, you know, pretty much just a layperson, you know, going after these kind of things. So
well, that's...
I want to say thank you.
Well, and that's fantastic, and I wish you all the luck in the world. What's the podcast going to be called? Do you have a title yet?
Yeah, it's called Circle City Crime.
Circle City Crime?
Yeah.
Okay, well, listeners, you heard it. So when this comes out, everybody give Chris a listen. Check out Circle City Crime. And buddy, if you need any help with anything, feel free to reach out at any time.
Bob, I appreciate that. I didn't expect you to put it on the show. I just wanted to say that to you personally. So thanks a lot and have a great day.
Yep, thank you and good luck.
All right, thank you.
Hi, Bob. This is Maya from Denmark.
Oh, well, we better make this quick because your long distance bill is going to be huge.
No, it's not actually.
Oh, good.
It's pretty cheap, I check.
Oh, fantastic.
I promised some of the other Danish Truth and Justice people, I promised them to call in and ask you if it's not specifically about the Melgar case, but is there anything we can do actively when we're so far away to help?
From that far away, the thing is with the, you know, with the day of the internet now, distance doesn't really mean a lot. You know, the only time we need people that are physically close to, you know, in proximity geographically to where we're working is when we need like boots on the ground, somebody to do things like pass out flyers or go knock on somebody's door or go check something locally. Other than that, I mean, I feel like you guys can contribute in the same ways that, you know, if someone was in Arizona in the United States could do, you know, and a lot of that is to, you know, helping, you know, so much of our investigation and the information that we've been able to put out on this podcast has come from listeners doing more research than I'm doing. You know, I mean, I do my best with it, but also a big part of my job is to, you know, write the episodes and record and do the business side of things. But a lot of, you know, for example, the long black hair that was found on the shirt sleeve above Jim. I've looked at all those crime scene photos. Yeah. I never noticed it, but it was listeners who found it and shared it with me. And that's something you can do whether you're in Houston or you're in Michigan or you're in Denmark. Anybody can go through the crime scene photos, the case files, all of that. And honestly, it makes a massive, huge difference. And really, that is the power of this movement we've all together created that we call the Truth and Justice Army, is that everybody has something to contribute. And a lot of times, all that is just time and attention to the case that was never given to it the first time around.
And it's crazy. We don't have a lot of murders in Denmark. And pretty much all murders get solved here. I think it's like 50 a year max.
Oh,
and
wow.
Maybe 35 of those are gang related. So it's not like we don't have a huge experience.
Sure.
With those. And we don't have, our justice system is very, very different from yours. Yeah, and someone who gets convicted of murder probably will wind up sitting in jail for like 17 years max.
Oh, really?
That's a life sentence in Denmark on average. Yeah.
I've read a little bit about.
It's mind boggling to me to put people in prison for like 636 years.
Right, yeah.
It makes no sense.
Well, you know, the biggest problem that I see with our system is, you know, we have these obviously much longer prison sentences, and there's places, I've never studied Denmark, but I've studied Norway, and they're similar. Like the longest prison sentence that they ever issue is like 20 years. But the difference is that their prisons, and I'm assuming Denmark is very similar, that their prisons are designed to rehabilitate the offenders.
Very much. Yeah.
Yeah. And ours aren't.
Very much.
You know, so if you go into a prison in Denmark and you spend 17 years and it's a constant rehabilitation process, and then, you know, ideally you come out a better person. Whereas in the United States, you almost have to keep people locked up because our prison systems are pathetic and they're not in any way rehabbing anyone. And in fact, that, you know, if someone goes into prison, you know, a good person, maybe they get wrongfully convicted or just wasn't, you know, or was maybe guilty of some sort of petty crime and get sent to prison. They oftentimes will come out being, not always, you know, there are obviously, you know, amazing people that overcome this, but a lot of times people come out as violent offenders when they weren't violent offenders when they went in because of what happens inside of the walls of our prisons, you know, and Jesse Eldridge has shared. So, you know, Ed was lucky in the fact that he was really big and he was African American and he was, which is the majority of the population of the unit he was in. He was able to sort of just settle in and not get harassed too much. Whereas Jesse Eldridge went in as, you know, a white guy that was not willing to affiliate with any gangs. And he has had to fight at 50 some years old that he is now. He has had to fight his way to survive through prison for over 20 years. And you can't expect somebody to live like that for all those years and then come out a better person than they were when they went in.
No. And nobody becomes less of a criminal from that. No one.
Right.
It's maddening.
Yeah.
But you have your own little tiny Danish chapter of Truth and Justice Army. We're at least three people here.
Oh, that's awesome. Have you guys ever met, or do you only talk on the internet?
No. We all communicated in the group and on private messages. I think we're going to meet sometime, though.
We
really should, because the longest you can drive from where I am, and the farthest away you can get here is like 4 hours drive.
Oh, so that's not too bad.
The distances aren't that long. It's a tiny country.
Right.
We should be able to meet each other.
Well, yeah, you guys should definitely do that. And hey, I really, really appreciate your time and your support, and I appreciate you calling in. And please pass along my thanks to our other Denmark listeners.
I will. They'll probably be listening if this makes it on the show.
Yeah, it'll definitely make it on the show. There.
Otherwise, I'll let them.
Yep, they'll hear it on Sunday for sure.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome. Have a nice weekend.
You too. Goodbye.
Bye.
Oh, it's Barbara from Connecticut. I guess if you don't succeed at first, try again.
Have you tried a couple times a day?
Yes. I'm glad to get through. And I don't have a case-related question, but I have a question for you, Bob, if that's okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. I would like to know, what lessons did you learn leaving a secure job to work on this podcast full time, and if you could do it again, what would you do differently?
Well, you know, me leaving the fire department to do this was definitely a leap of faith. It was kind of a perfect storm for me in the fact that I really wasn't happy in my job anymore after all those years. Being the chief I didn't enjoy it anymore, you know, dealing with the politicians that I had to deal with. But still, it was a scary leap of faith, and the lessons that I learned was that it's okay to take those leaps of faith. But you know, for anyone listening that's thinking about doing something crazy like that, be cautiously optimistic, because you know, for me, I didn't just quit my job and do a podcast. You know, I was doing the podcast. I built it up to a point where we had a revenue stream, and I was able to calculate and say, okay, well, if I can continue, for me, it was, if I can continue doing this at the level I'm doing it now, then I'll be okay. My family will be okay. And of course, luckily so far, I've been able to do that. You know, it wasn't, you know, I'm just leaving and then hoping to make money on the other end. As far as the question, would I do it again? Absolutely. It's been the best decision I've made in my whole life, for myself, for my wife, for my kids, my whole family. And for me personally, I feel like what I was missing in being the fire chief as opposed to a firefighter on the line was that direct communication and direct interactions with people and trying to actually make a difference in people's lives. And I feel by doing this, you know, I have, the, even if it's little things, just being able to impact people's lives on a daily basis, whether it's the people that we're trying to help, whether it's the people that are listening and that are helping me, just to know that you know, every day somehow there's an impact being made, really makes it all worthwhile to me. And then, you know, on the more practical side of things, you know, I'm home every day. I work from home. I have a set, you know, the studio is a different building from my house, but you know, in the summertime when my kids are at home, I can go inside and have lunch with them, or they can pop out here and hang out with me, or do whatever, and it provides some flexibility and schedule. So all in all, this has been the best move that I've ever made. I would absolutely do it again.
That's wonderful to hear, a real success story, and I know I'm real happy you did. one other thing, there's a case in New York City waiting for you. Just listen to this. A young black male, 22 years old, on Tuesday was convicted to life without parole. And what I've been reading about, it's a case with forced confession, tainted DNA, jury misconduct. I think this case sounds perfect for you, and love to see you in New York City.
Well, New York City is one of my favorite places to visit, so you have my attention. You know, but you know, what you should do is take the time, go on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. There's a case submission link that you can click there, a button you can push. Fill out the form and send it to me, so we have, when we start going through more cases, that's in the mix, so we can at least take a look at it.
Well, you know, and I don't know the detail. I mean, it's just, I know front page from the Daily News and the New York Post. I don't believe a word of it after all I've heard on all seasons, and certainly Central Park 5, if you followed that documentary. So I don't believe a word in the newspaper. I'm going to submit it to look into it, because this is a 22-year-old kid whose life in prison without parole. So I think a good one to look at. I'll submit it.
Okay. Thank you so much. And thank you for calling in, and thank you for all of your support.
Oh, absolutely. Have a great day. Hope the call-in was all a success.
It has been so far. We've got to talk to some really cool people, yourself included.
Oh, thank you. You know what to say.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Hi, this is Christina from California.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. I'm kind of in shock that I got through. I saw it in Twitter, and I was driving.
Well, I'm glad you, and actually you got through at the last minute. This is our last call, so it better be a good one.
Oh, well, okay, so I actually had a question about the shirt in the bathtub.
Okay.
So I actually work for Costco, not in Costco, but I sell window treatments for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of had a thought on, you know, everyone originally was talking about how you have to have a membership to purchase there. Have you guys done any more searching on that shirt?
We have, you know, there's not a lot we can do, you know, without a warrant. We, you know, we can't ask Costco to look into the purchase records. It's nice for us to know that that is an option available to law enforcement if they ever get to that point where they want to look into it, but there's nothing more that we can do with it.
Okay. So, one thought that I had, cause I got so excited when I heard that, I was like, yes, you do have to have a membership to Costco. There we go. But what I found out was you can actually buy gift cards to Costco. So not necessarily that she bought it, because I don't think she bought it. I, you know, it's not her size, and I hardly go down. I go up, but I do not go down in shirt sizes most of the time.
Right.
The key being that if you purchase a big purchase from Costco, sometimes they give you a gift card called a cashback card, and anyone can use them. So I was just, you know, wondering if Sandy got a cashback card or if she had ever gone to Costco before.
Yeah, so, and we actually, you would have heard this, but we talked about it with another caller a little bit ago. But no, when I actually was able to speak to Sandy directly about this and asked her, and she said that she's literally never been in a Costco. She's never shopped at one. So they've never had a membership, but she's never been in there. And according to her, she's also, no one's ever given her a gift, you know, of a shirt like that. So she has no idea, but she did, however, and again, I won't drone on about it because I mentioned it earlier, but she did say that she owned a white kind of frilly shirt like that that she used as a bathing suit cover up. But this was December, and she said she wouldn't have had that out for months prior to that, the shirt she used as a cover up. And she's not sure that that is it because she was just shown a picture of it. But she said she had something similar as a cover up. But it, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a, obviously not a woman, and I don't wear bathing suit cover ups. But it seems to me like this, the stuff that when my wife wears a bathing suit cover up, it's something that is very loose and just sort of like hangs off of her that she puts on. Whereas this is a much more of what it seems like a more of a form fitting shirt to me.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking my call. I know that you guys are really busy.
No problem. And thank you so much for calling. We appreciate your support.
Yeah, of course. Have a great day, Bob.
You too. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Now that was our last caller, and I want to thank everyone who called in. And I know from our voicemail line that is blowing up right now that a lot of you tried to get through and weren't able to and were sent to voicemail. And I want to thank you all for doing that as well. We don't have time right now. We've got to get this episode edited and ready for publish on Sunday, but we will go through those voicemails. And if there's some questions in there that we haven't answered yet, then we will include those in next week's follow-up. And again, I want to thank everybody for all of your support and your engagement. It means the world to us. And thank you to all of you again who called in today. And next week's episode, we are going to be hearing from, finally, Sandy's attorney, Max Sechrest. That's next week on Truth and Justice. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Mike Bussing is our executive producer, and all music for the show was created and composed by PutThemInASong.com. Thank you to Amanda Meyer with Willow Photo and Design for designing and creating our Friday follow-up logo. And all of our font across all of our logos and banners was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our transcription team, Rachel Timberman, Natalie Alicia, Pamela Westby, Katherine Christman, and Jen Reese Incandela. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in a number of ways. To financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/truthandjustice.
On the Patreon page, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we have reward levels on Patreon that include access to behind-the-scenes videos of the tapings of our Friday follow-up episodes, Truth and Justice Army t-shirts and hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the companies that sponsor this program. And if you have a new case that you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in the investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters, you can connect with us on Twitter. The show's handle is @TruthJusticePod, and my personal Twitter handle is @BobRuffTruth. And for more personal interactions, feel free to follow me on Instagram @TruthJusticePod. And don't forget, we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, or tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
And I'm Mike Bussing.
And this has been Truth and Justice.